Hey, welcome to the Next Wave podcast. Consider us your chief AI officer in your business. My name is Matt Wolf. I have the number one YouTube channel in the AI space. I also run futuretools.com, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nathan Lands, founder of lore.com. We want to bring you the latest AI news and trends, show you how you can use AI in your business and personal life, and help make it super easy for you to understand and execute. We're going to equip you with the knowledge to thrive in this upcoming wave of change.
That was good 4 or 5 years. And then since after that, I focused on web analytics. So because I'm already doing delivering traffic and I'm also analyzing traffic. So I said, why don't I just focus on analyzing the data directly so I can, you know, advise the business or the team.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tarun Shum, and in this episode, we're speaking with the founder of Suburbs Finder, Gilbert Melgar. With 20 years of experience in the field of data analytics, he's no stranger to the relevance and power of data. His journey from the Philippines to Australia is filled with stories of the ups and downs when he moved here, and when the property bug bit him. A family man himself, Melgar keeps his daily priorities in check by balancing life and work.
Well, I'm still working in the corporate world. Me and my wife. My wife is an accountant. We have 3 girls. Age 3, 7, and 10, so it's a really full busy household. And yeah, typically on a normal day, you know, still working from home, still lucky enough to be able to do that while looking after the kids when they're not in school and doing the regular job. But mostly after that, I'm really into looking at the data in terms of property investments.
That's great. And what's your sort of background in the data space? Like, is there specific industries that's related to property, or is it a completely different space that you're in working for?
It's a completely different space. Yeah, I've started doing search engine optimization way back in 2002, even before SEO was a term. So I'm doing, I'm making websites rank on Google, Yahoo, Bing during that time. And then in relation to that, I'm analyzing data as well. So around 2006, I've focused more on web analytics. So, I started on making the websites rank on search engine. And then, so I'm delivering traffic to the website, and then I'm analyzing those traffic. What are they clicking on? How can we generate more revenue for the business? So yeah, those are the data that I'm analyzing.
With the longing for the past, Melgar opens a window to how his life looked like in the Philippines before moving to Australia in 2011.
Born and raised in Manila, Philippines. And so we have one sibling. Mom and dad are just we're in the middle. What do you call this? Middle class family or working class family. And yeah, graduated with a degree of I don't know if you're gonna say I'm a numbers guy, but it just happened that I was able to finish Bachelor of Science in Mathematics.
Oh, awesome. Wow. Okay. I'll have to delve into a little bit about that shortly. But Gilbert, I'm really curious. I guess, as you said, you grew up and raised in Manila in the Philippines. Obviously, your parents are working class, as you said. Are they still living in the Philippines at the moment, or have they also migrated here as well?
They're still all living in the Philippines. It's just me and my wife that moved here.
Now, as a father to 3 young children, Melgar welcomes the opportunity to reminisce about his own childhood. He shares fond memories of what it was like growing up in the Philippines, from attending classes at 7 o'clock in the morning to living with 6 people at a boarding school.
It's just the way that you can, you know, freely play on the streets with, you know everyone in the street, every kid on the street, you know them, the parents, you know, but you can just freely play at any time of the day in the street without being getting hit by a car or being run over or being taken by strangers and all, you know, because everyone knows everyone before, right? Back in the day. And that, I think that's one of the most thing. And there's no, I would say there's no gadgets during that time. So you really get to spend most of your time outside the house. I do like sport, and I used to play also, you know, being Philippines mostly influenced by Western countries, specifically America. So it's number one sport there would be basketball. So everyone, you know, during their school sports school activity, everyone's playing basketball, even the girls. Primary school was the near school that where we lived in, but it just so happened, you know, that I was able to get accepted to a better school for secondary or during high school. That's why I moved away from my parents, because the commute thing is, you know, during that time, it's traffic is horrible back then, even now, or it got more worse, right? So just traveling, because back then, just traveling on a 20-kilometer distance, it will take you a good, I would say, 2 hours to get there during that time. So class starts at 7 a.m., and that early. Class starts at 7 a.m. all the way to 3 o'clock. And then, and so from where I live, if I continue traveling, I need to leave around or wake up 5 o'clock and then leave around 5:30, right? To make it to the morning class, 7 a.m. Yeah, so what I did is I just went to boarding school. So boarding school there is totally different here. Boarding school here is more expensive. Their boarding school there is sort of like there's 6 of you in one big room. Yeah. Yeah, it's a shared dorm. Yeah, that's how we call it. It's like 3 double decks or 3 bunk beds. It just so happened that the dorm that's managing the dorm that I was staying is being managed by one of my grandmothers.
As a young man in the throes of life, navigating growing pains and the hard work a student's day-to-day entailed, Melgar gives us a glimpse into his life as a student in Manila in the 90s.
Most of the schools are in the metropolitan area at the time, so we live in a suburb area. So if you're spending 1.5 hours going to school, and then you'll spend another 1.5 hours going home, so basically 3 hours of your day just goes to commute.
That's right. It's almost like as though you're going to work, because you think about it, you know, except actually, you probably have the same hours of work, except just starting much earlier. You know, it sounds like a 9 to 5, except you're starting 7 to 3. I don't quite understand why is the school system so long there, or the hours?
You have 8 subjects, right? And each subject is 1 hour.
Wow, they really do push a lot of education then, I guess, in that side, because it's very interesting. Different, countries and different cultures have a lot more emphasis on that. I mean, in Australia, kids probably start at 9 and finish at 3, and that's already more than enough for them, and they get tired. So, yeah. I mean, do you remember much of that, or was it because you pretty much spent majority of your time at school then. Did you go back on the weekends to see your family, your parents? Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes I go back during the weekends, but sometimes if I'm swamped with homeworks and all, sometimes I just don't. They're the ones who just visit me. Yeah.
And what were your parents doing in terms of work?
My dad used to be a sea seafarer. So he works on the cruise ships, you know, and my dad used to be an admin clerk in one of the offices. Mom used to be an office clerk in admin stuff, yeah.
In deciding what undergraduate degree to take, Melgar was a forward thinker who ultimately considered which path would land him a good job after graduation.
I really didn't like programming during that time, but it just so happened that, you know, during that time I was thinking, 1997, 2001, everyone's talking about the Y2K bug during that time, right? Everyone's talking about it. I was like, what course can I do? Well, what type of job? So I was like, I'll give programming a crack so that at least, you know, when I graduate 2001, at least, you know, I can get a job somewhere in IT and what. But after graduating, it was hard getting a job. You know, I was unemployed for a year. Yeah, during that time.
So you graduated back in 2001, did you say?
Yeah.
How long was your course for then?
4 years.
He continues to share the name of his school and gives more insight on where his focus on his studies eventually led him.
The University of St. Thomas, or Santo Tomas, the way we call it.
So by that time, were you still boarding around that area, or did you go back home and travel?
I just travel during that time because the class there is more flexible enough.
What were you doing during that time? Did you do any part-time work as well?
I just fully focused on my studies during that time.
Yeah, that's great. And then when you finished your university degree, then you went out to look for a job. And you, as you said, you had graduated with mathematics, or did you start? Yeah. But were you looking at going into computers initially?
I went into IT industry.
Coming up after the break, we'll learn more about a business venture he never imagined he'd be in.
I'm 21, 22 during that time, part owner of a rave club. So yeah, living the dream.
How he found himself using the powerful potential of SEO.
I remember I made one of the most revenue generating sites of mine during that time was Paris Hilton website.
How he eventually ended up in Australia after building his corporate career in the Philippines.
I visited Australia prior to that for client meeting, and I was like, looks like a really nice place to live in, especially when you're raising a family.
And that's next. I'm Tarun Sharm, and you're listening to Property Investory. With a degree in mathematics, Melgar faced his post-university years with determination to succeed. But that doesn't mean to say he didn't have his share of run-ins with challenges when he started looking for a job.
My major is computer science, so that's why I'm to program right away. So, but I had an option, or I had an opportunity to teach, but I said, I don't think I'll last that long. It wasn't really a challenge during that time, but here's the thing, you would be shocked when I tell you this. So during that time, I didn't have a job. I was having a hard time landing a gig. So instead of that, asked for my savings from my parents put up a business or invest it somewhere, right, while I look for a job. And it just so happened that my friends invited me because they're going to renovate their bar, and they want a silent investor. And yeah, that's where I put my money. And yeah, you'll be surprised, the bar is not a typical pub, but it was a rave club. So, you know, I'm 21, 22 during that time, part owner of a rave club. So yeah, living the dream.
What did you have to do being a part owner? Did you need to do any sort of hands-on help, or you just put your money in there and then just let them, you know, run the job?
Yeah, we just put our money in there, you know, because as a silent partner, there are actually nine major partners who's running the business, and each partner got their own silent partners. So with just 18 of us, with just our group of friends, pack is always full.
Melgar continues on and lifts the curtain on what opportunities opened up and the takeaways he learned from the business venture.
It was actually good. We did well. It did go well, except for the, you know, we're always on, the place is always on the news because of the fights and happening and all. And, you know, other not so good publicities during that time. But yeah, I was able to learn a lot of good things as well. Well, the takeaway is, if you're doing proper chair, don't spend it right away. Just save it, right? So instead of saving it, my proper chair, just go to my tab.
Oh, enjoying life, living it up.
Yeah.
But you're still young, which I think that was a thing that I think we all need to go through in order to be able to experience what it's like in life, because you only live that life once.
And the good thing with that is I was able to meet a lot of interesting people running their own business, people who's running, have a job in IT, people who has a good position in the companies. And that's where I've met a guy who's doing SEO during that time.
While he was already a part owner of a successful rave club, Melgar made sure not to pass up the chance to smartly use SEO to his advantage and generate more income on the side.
It lasted for almost 3 years. Yeah. So we really did a good run. And during that, in the middle of that, I met that guy doing SEO, but he didn't know that what he's doing is SEO, because what he did during that time, he's making money out of making celebrity fan sites. Right? How are you making money out of celebrity fan sites? And I was like, and then he showed me, I'm making money through being an affiliate, all of these pop-up ads during that time, right? So he's getting paid for that. It was easy, so easy to rank on certain keywords during that time. Yeah. So that's how it all started. Now, I think I can do that. And, me being a background on computer science, I did my own, created all fan sites, did HTML in Notepad and run it. So all the celebrities that I can think of, created a fan sites and put in pop-up ads. I remember, I made one of the most revenue-generating sites of mine during that time was Paris Hilton website.
Building up his experience and his connections with the Rave Club and his SEO-related work on celebrity fan sites, he soon ventured to start his corporate career.
While the Rave Club is still on, so that's what I'm doing. And after that, I decided, okay, Rave Club's still there. I decided, okay, the fan sites are here. I was like, since I've met or already have connections in the corporate world, I reached out to them and, they connected me, pointed me to the right people. Still went to the job interview and was luckily enough to finally start my corporate journey. I became an affiliate program specialist. So it was really in line to what I'm doing with the fan sites. So when I'm doing the fan sites, I'm sort of like the affiliate, right? So now the job that I got is the one in the middle, being the affiliate specialist or the affiliate program specialist, dealing with the affiliates and dealing with the publishers. So I did that for a year and I said, okay. And then one of my boss told me, hey, we're opening up a role for an SEO. You want to give it a crack? I said, yeah, sure. Why not? And, I'm working for a back office, a U.S. office, who is a back office in Manila. So that's where I got really trained well, because the SEO competition during that time already in the US is already, I would say, competitive. Because they're already 2000, they're already running, or e-commerce is already booming on their end. They're already running their own AdSense, you know, pay-per-click marketing, and all of this. They're running Google Analytics. Google Analytics was still new during that time.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And what kind of company was this?
They're a direct reseller of back products, Apple products.
Yeah. Oh, Apple. Oh, wow. That would have been even better. Technology. So it was technology and, you know, combine that with SEO. It sort of, you know, was ranking, especially I think at that point, a lot of people were doing a lot of reviews on YouTube as well too.
YouTube was still new during back then.
Oh, yes. Yes. So pretty much a lot of it was based on the website. So people were coming through the website to purchase, yeah, the Mac products.
You know, when they type in Mac, specifically like Mac products or Mac laptop, you know, we make the company website appear on the first, second, or third rank listings of organic search results in Google. And, you know, that's where the traffic comes in. That's where the revenue comes in.
With all hands on deck in his corporate career, Melgar's journey for the next few years in this space led him to work on different companies, learning more about data and web analytics.
That was good 4 or 5 years. And then since after that, I focused on web analytics. So because I'm already doing, I'm delivering traffic and I'm also analyzing traffic. So I said, why don't I just focus on analyzing the data directly so I can, you know, advise the business or the team. This is where the revenue is coming in. This is where the traffic's coming in. This is how the users are behaving inside the websites. This is how we should optimize to increase more revenue.
Excellent. Wow, that is a cool role to be in, because then you're not only taking the data, you're able to recommend. And then I assume that they'll probably just hire more people to do the implementation.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's so cool. And I guess, were you in that same company for that period of time as well while you're analyzing data, or you went out to do something else with different company?
I just went there for like a year and then I moved to different companies.
As Melgar built his career in the corporate space in the Philippines, he found himself hearing the siren call of Australia.
Because it just so happened that the client, when I moved here, that the client that I was working for used to be based here in Sydney. So I just continued working for them as an offshore resource for a month. And then, I started looking for a job here. I visited Australia prior to that for a client meeting. And I was like, oh, okay, this is looks like a really nice place to live in, especially when you're raising a family. So my wife and I, who's just, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend during that time, said, oh, okay, we can try Australia. And then we said, okay, let's just give it a crack. We applied as independent skilled migrant. And we submitted our papers or requirements. And after 6 months, we got the visa, and we didn't know that the visa that was given to us is already a permanent resident because of our skill set. Because what we did is, instead of me applying as the direct applicant, we decided to be her as the main applicant because she's an accountant. And we, during that time, accountant is one of the in-demand lists. Occupation.
Wow, congrats on that. That's exciting. So did you have a job lined up before you came to Australia?
I just continued working as a resource, as an offshore resource for that. And then while I'm working for them, so after work, you know, I started looking for a job here. So the transition was, I guess, we're lucky that we didn't experience having a hard time getting a job here, because when we got here, my wife actually, when we got here after 2 days, she already have a job. Yeah, and because she's working for a global company, so the one that they have office here once they found out that she's moving here, they just offered her a job.
What was that transition like? Because it's a new country, new culture. Was it a shock to the system, or you just went, okay?
It was a bit shock to the system at first because, first, the weather is different. Second, it's, we're used to talking American English, and in here, it's like British accent or Australian accent. It's totally hard to understand at first. Like, what we're saying? It's like eating their words, But yeah, I got used to it. And then everything closes early. And then eventually got used to it and then realized, this is a really nice place.
Gilbert Melgar's story continues in the next episode of Property Investory. He reveals the aha moment that hooked him to finally dive into property investing.
I was like, how are they able to do that? And they're under their 30s. That's the time that I became curious about it.
What and where he is and his wife's first property was?
We bought one for $595. So we were able to save 10% of that.
He shares some of the key lessons he's learned as a migrant from a third world country investing in property in Australia.
But there's one question they're gonna, if you ask them, they're just gonna say, do your own research, right? If you ask them, so where's the perfect place to buy? Do your own research.
And that's next time on Property Investory.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.